My name is Bernice, and I'm a recovering food addict. I grew up in disease, my own and my parents' disease, and I was full of fear in that home, and I didn't feel I felt alone, and I sought comfort, and one of the great ways that I found comfort was in food. And you know, I didn't have tools then. I just, a problem would come up in school or wherever, and I'd eat. And I remember my eating through the years. At first it was, you know, I did. I had one. And but as my disease progressed, I had three. And then as it kept progressing, I would have 12, you know, wrappers of sugar. And then toward the end, toward my bottom, it was eating all day, you know. It was eating till I got sick. And I remember once thinking of getting rid of the food, and I tried it, and it absolutely disgusted me. So, you know, I'm grateful that my disease didn't take me to that end of the spectrum yet, you know, because there's a lot of things I haven't done yet. But I came to OA about 26 years ago, and, you know, I didn't stay. I was still, you know, that fearful, anxious person, and, you know, that person who didn't like being told what to do. And I had had some recovery in a 12-step program about learning how to be independent, you know, independent of other people in my life. And I took that to an extreme. And, you know, I mean, people in my family would ask me what I was doing or where I'd been, and I wouldn't tell them, you know, because I was too independent. I didn't think I had to tell them. So I had a lot of recovery in accepting life on life's terms and adjusting to life. And, I could never do that. I wanted things the way I wanted them. And when I couldn't get things the way I wanted them, when I couldn't get people to be who I wanted them to be and do what I wanted them to do, it was so frustrating, and I'd get filled with anger and resentment and eat. But, you know, this disease doesn't care how you feel. You know, I ate when times were good also, you know, and I don't live my life today according to my feelings, like I don't feel like doing something. I do it when I recognize that it's good for me, and it's good for me to get up in front of all of you and know that, you know, I have a lot of friends pulling for me in this room and supporting me and listening to me. And I, too, have learned how to listen in this program to other people. You know, listen to their remember whens, you know, that they sat in front of the TV and couldn't stop eating. And I swore, you know, every time I picked up, you know, that was my diet mentality. I would swear I'll never do that again. Never do that again. I'll never eat like that again. So I got a lot of tips outside of OA, and it was, you know, ways to diet. And, you know, I tried all the ways, shots, pills. I remember I used to go to this doctor in Roxbury, and going on the train, it was like, you know, it was like I was going and someone was going to help me. There were going to be shots and pills to take, and I wouldn't eat. And they worked. I mean, they made me crazy, but they worked, and I didn't eat. But, you know, this disease just progresses, and it took me to places I didn't want to go. And I accepted friendships in my life that really weren't good for me. So I, you know, when other people share their stories, it's a lot about eating, and I find for me that I like to hear, you know, I like to hear some remember whens, but I like to hear the recovery. You know, what are you doing in your recovery? And for me, it took me a long, long time to take that first step, that I didn't have any power over food, you know. I knew that I didn't have any power over people, places, and things, but food, I thought, my thinking was like, everybody eats, you know, but everybody doesn't eat the way I was eating. Everybody doesn't romance food the way, you know, I was. It became my best friend, but, you know, as you know how this disease runs, it turned against me, and it also became more important to me than my God, than my higher power. And so I came back to OA, and I had what was very valuable to me. I had, you know, I was beginning to get honest, because I did. I accepted the first step, and I surrendered. And the first time I came, it was like, you know, I thought I was doing this. I thought I had to do all this. I thought that I would restore myself to sanity, you know. So when I took the first step, I recognized that is what I've heard so many people say is a surrender. And I have totally surrendered to the first step. And I live my life one day at a time. And, you know, sometimes that fouls me up because, like, I forget to plan something, you know, plan for something that's coming up. But it makes my life manageable. It just today is all I have to do. And today is the only day that I have to be abstinent. And I've enjoyed and I've had contented abstinence, not perfect, but contented. And I remember, like, as a kid, I was always, you know, ill at ease with other people. And when I saw, like, how my family operated, I went out into, you know, like, the world, and other people didn't, you know, they seemed okay. I didn't think they had the problems that I had. And one of the biggest problems was, like, you know, keeping the secrets. And I think that went into my own disease, too, when I couldn't be honest. I kept a lot of secrets about, you know, how I was eating. And I stole food. I stole money for food. And I remember some instances when I was a kid that I stole what I thought was a pipe. And I thought, why would I steal a pipe? I don't smoke. I'm 6 years old. And it was a licorice pipe. You know, it came to me in abstinence. Yeah, I wanted that sugar. I always, you know, sugar and flour were my foods, and I didn't want anything else, really, you know. And today my food plan is so healthy, and I enjoy it all. And I think that God meant for me to enjoy food, but, you know, not abuse it. And I enjoy my abstinent meals. So I'm being restored to sanity here, and you know, my mind opened up when I came back to what everyone was saying, and I started to try all the suggestions. And a big key was I was willing. You know, I was willing to get this because I began to recognize from hearing other people that this disease will kill me. You know, it is a killer. It will take, it will turn my thinking around back to the negativity. It will deteriorate my thinking, and I'll just be, you know, the person that I used to be, and I don't like that person. I hated that person. I just spoke about myself and thought about myself in really derogatory terms. So this willingness that I have and the knowledge that I'm getting here and the knowledge that my higher power does not want me to eat. You know, he wants me to recover so that I can be useful to other people, and I can, you know, I can like myself, and I can serve the purpose that Overeaters Anonymous talks about. So I operate in a different way today. You know, I'm not that mean witch that I was in my marriage. My husband and I are good friends today, and I'm just so grateful that I have people in my life that will listen to me and, you know, that support me in this program. So I have a lot of love for people in the meeting rooms that I attend. And am I 20 minutes up? No? Oh. I have an upcoming, I have a couple of weddings that I'm going to be going to, and I'm not in that, well, I got to diet for the wedding, you know. I don't have to diet for any event because, you know, I know what I'm going to have each day. And, you know, what a blessing that is to know what I'm going to eat, because I remember, you know, in my eating career, it was like I'd be sitting in the living room saying, well, I'm through for the night. I'm not going to eat any more food. And just as I finished it, I got up and went to the fridge and got more food. And I just felt such shame around my eating. I felt such shame around my behavior toward other people. I mean, I remember when I first came to the steps and I looked at the fourth step, I thought, you know, I would have ended that, you know, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of you, because that's how I live my life, you know. And so my whole life has been turned around, and I have a great faith in this program, and I have a great faith and trust in my higher power. But sometimes I think that my higher power might not do it, you know, the way I would like to see it done, you know. So it goes back to acceptance. And I know what to do when I get into my feelings, when I'm, you know, when I'm angry. And I used to deny my feelings. No, I'm not angry. I don't have resentment. And now I just know I can use, you know, the seventh step and ask God to remove my anger. And, you know, abstinence brings me the clear mind to know what is my problem and what isn't my problem. And I'm not responsible for other people. And so I just feel so grateful that when, you know, when a resentment comes up, and I used to live in resentment. It was, you know, 20-year-old resentment's what someone said to me, you know, just a small thing, and I would eat, and I would get angry, and I would eat. And I know today that, you know, that seventh step is gonna is asking God to remove my character flaws, my defects of character. So I use every step, and the steps to me are what, you know, it's really all about. I use every tool every day. I make 3 phone calls a day. That hasn't been perfect, but it's been 95% maybe, you know. And I'm grateful for a sponsor. You know, I didn't want to have a sponsor. Again, I thought I, you know, Miss Independence could do it alone. And my sponsor is just a big gift for me. I mean, she knows who she is. She knows she's not God, and she listens to me, and it's just so great that, you know, I can take a 10-step every night and know again that, well, maybe there's an amend I have to make. And I could never say I'm sorry. I could never say I was wrong. And it really, you know, it hurt other people, and it hurt me greatly that I'd want to say I'm sorry. I'd want to say my fault, but I just couldn't bring myself to do that because, you know, I compared other people in my life, and it seemed like they were hurting me, you know, and I didn't see in my disease how I was hurting other people. So the thing that I thought was for weak people was prayer. And I use prayer, you know, I pray every morning. And when I first came back, like the first year, it was like I was just living in prayer, you know. It was, and today, like when I go through my day, the program is uppermost in my mind all day. And yet I know when I work, sometimes I think work should, you know, it gets a little up on that list of what's important. But when I do go to work, I do a good job, you know. I don't go and I'm not a slacker. I do a good job for whatever company that I work for. So I've had that, I'm awake, you know. I had that spiritual awareness, and I'm glad I'm awake. I'm glad that I can feel my feelings, you know, because everybody has them. So when I feel them, it, you know, I feel like a human being. again, where when I ate, I was like a robot, you know. I was just drifting along with the tide. So I think I've 5 minutes. Wow. I guess I'll talk about the steps more because, you know, when I don't have to make a lot of decisions today. I have to make, you know, one, and that's to turn my will and my life over to God's care and to know that, you know, God loves me and is taking care of me is something I didn't know for a long, long time. I thought that, you know, that God was the problem. He was just too... You know, he just wanted me to be perfect. And I remember thinking, until I'm perfect, I won't go to God because, you know, I'm sure that he doesn't. I just thought that he didn't care about me because of the mess that my life was in. And yet I realized today in taking responsibility for my life that, you know, I made a lot of the messes, you know. So I know that God is, you know, he's on my side, and I know that he is more powerful than this disease. That gives me a lot of hope that, you know, God has greater power than this disease. And yet, I know that this disease could kill me. So I take my inventory, and it's, you know, sometimes it's painful. I say, oh, I'm doing that again, you know, or... I'm angry again, but it's just progress, you know. It's not being perfect, and I made my life a hell by just trying to be perfect. So, you know, I rat myself out, you know. I admit what is going on to my sponsor in a given day, and you people have given me the courage to do that because, you know, I hear other people doing that very same thing. So when I came back, I was entirely ready, and God knew it. And my abstinence was what it says in the promises. It just was automatic, you know. And I used to think that the program was just, there was too much to do, and now I see it's just like I'm doing 1%, and my higher power is doing all the rest of it if I let him. What else? So, you know, I made that list of people that I harmed, and I was surprised that I put me number one because I really did harm, you know, my disease in me harmed me the most. And then I've made amends to family members, to God, you know, by trying to be the woman that he wants me to be. So I've made a lot of amends, and... I have that gratitude, you know. I've heard here that a grateful heart doesn't eat, and I'm grateful, and I'm done.
Hi, my name is Mary Ann. I'm a compulsive overeater and addict. And I have never been this nervous before during a qualification. I've been in program for almost 19 years. I've been abstinent this September. It'll be 6 years. So obviously there's been a lot of happening in between there. I'm 44 years old. I've been married for almost 23 years. I'm glad there's no math majors in here because I really don't know if it has been 23 years. My husband knows the exact number. And I know the ages of my children and my granddaughter, but... I got three kids, 21, 19, and 15. And why did I come to OA? I only had 35 pounds to lose when I came here. And, you know, even then, nobody said, gee, you're fat or anything. All I knew was that I absolutely hated myself. And what's more, I couldn't stop eating, you know, which... baffled me because, you know, I'm like that the person in the big book who, you know, was unusually successful at solving my other problems. Well, this was just one problem that just would not be solved. And so you know, through, you know, therapy and counseling, et cetera, somebody finally steered me to OA. And, you know, I went kind of thinking, it's not really for me. And I remember the first meeting I went to, I was lost in this big housing complex, and the security guard, I stopped to ask the security guard where the OA meeting was, and he says, what's that? And I said, Overeaters Anonymous. He says, you don't look like you need Overeaters Anonymous. And, you know, I said, well, I do, you know. And when I got there, I realized that I was home. Now, I didn't, just because I knew I was home didn't mean I grasped it wholeheartedly initially. You know, I thought it was a good idea, but I thought the whole thing was about chemicals, you know. If you get this stuff, flour, sugar, and at that time for me it was grains, out of your body, then everything will be okay. And, you know, I took that literally. The community I was in didn't recommend making phone calls or, you know, and I thought the steps were just something that you read at the beginning of a meeting. And, you know, that was the extent of my quote-unquote tools. And I got the results that I get when I do things halfway. I kept on getting back into the food. And I didn't understand it. I was like, how can this be? You know, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And, you know, I had the opportunity to go into another community, and things were a little bit more prescribed in that community, and I became abstinent. And you know, let me say, I think most addicts must share this. I was powered on fear. Fear was my main motivator most of the time, and when I came into the program. Guess what made me abstinent? Guess what made me want to be abstinent from my sponsor? I was so scared of her that I can remember the sweaty palms in the morning on the phone with her, because she would be one of these ones who would be silent and just make me talk, and I'd be in the morning and all choked up and, you know, thinking I had to tell her an entertaining story. And you know, I was really performing for her, and I was scared to death to tell her I had eaten. So I did, and it didn't occur to me to lie to her, because, you know, I figured she'd crawl through the phone and get me. So I was abstinent, and, you know, I think that lasted about 6 weeks. You know, and it was wonderful boot camp, because I needed that. You know, with the extreme lack of discipline I came in with, I needed something to motivate me. And, you know, it, you know, if it couldn't be an altruistic, gee, I'd like to get better, it had to be, gee, I'm afraid of my sponsor. You know, whatever worked, and it worked for me. But it didn't, like I said, it didn't work indefinitely, and I needed to get away from that sponsor. And I'm still grateful for everything that she gave me, as afraid of her as I was. But then I went into a different community, and, you know, I had good abstinence for a couple of years, you know, and I was making the rounds of meetings and, you know, qualifying here and there and, you know, really kind of building up this idea in my head of how wonderful an OA member I was and, you know, how I was really, you know, probably miss OA. And, you know, before you know it, you know, I started to, you know, act like I was the one getting the abstinence. And I completely forgot that part about, you know, God and higher power. And, you know, it was me keeping me abstinent. And, you know, and I acted accordingly. When people would eat, I'd jump all over them saying, how could you do this? How could you do this? Complete misunderstanding of what this program is all about, and most of all, what this disease is all about. So, you know, God had some plans for me. I ended up going out there myself, and, you know, I'm not, to me, it wasn't like a cataclysmic thing. It was like a little slow, you know, gradual thing where, you know, I slowly went out there and slowly stopped going to meetings and slowly stopped doing phone calls and, you know, all the while thumbing my nose thinking, I'm not really sick. I don't really have a disease. What are they talking about, et cetera, et cetera. And then came time for when I was finally kind of through with eating my breakfast, lunch, and dinner at you know, the pharmacy and, you know, wanting to, you know, think, oh, this is really great to be sick to my stomach all the time and have acid indigestion up to here. When it finally came time to come back, golly, I couldn't. And that really surprised me. I thought I had control over this. I thought I could turn it on and off when I felt like it. I thought I could come back anytime. And I really found out how cunning, baffling, and powerful this disease was. The desire to be abstinent was nil. I had no desire, and I wanted to, but at the same time, it was always supplanted, as the big book says, by that old threadbare idea, I'll be able to handle it this time, I'll only have one this time, and it was never true. And the insanity was, I did that over and over again for a couple of years. And I can relate to Dr. Bob saying 17 years, I did this constantly, daily. Yeah, I can relate to that. I can relate to that because I've done it. And my abstinence today is based on a trust in a God that I never knew was possible. I came in believing in God, but I didn't believe that, you know, he was that interested in me or that this was something that was in his realm. I really thought it was in my realm. This is my responsibility. I'm supposed to do this. And the number of examples that I've had of God working in my life, the first spiritual experience I had, I remember I used to roll my eyes when people would say the most spiritual thing I do on a daily basis is put my food on a scale. Well, you know, I thought, yeah, right, you know, you're crazy. Basically, that's just what I said, because I didn't believe it. And then one night, it was 10 o'clock at night. I lived in Lynn, which is a suburb of Boston, and I was making a dinner for my husband who was coming home from work late, and it was on the stove, and I realized, I am in real danger of eating this. Not only am I in real danger, I know I'm going to eat this. And because I asked God for help, because I got down on my knees, there was no one that I could call. I didn't know anybody that I could call at 10 o'clock at night. This was like 2 years into the program. The feeling passed, and I didn't eat. And I was like, what happened? How did that happen? That's never happened before. Anytime I've ever wanted to eat, I've eaten. You know, I've never walked through it. And so that was a experience of a spiritual experience. I've had many more since then, and they're not always with the food. They're not always with the food. God doesn't always show his power with me just with the food. I'm also, from my past, I'm an incest survivor. And, you know, I think a lot of people in program are, for whatever reason. And, you know, I had a big healing experience with my perpetrator, my uncle. My normal reaction to life was to be afraid, and so I was afraid of him. I left my town. I went to another county so that I could go to school to be away from him. And just to make a long story short, I ended up seeing him, you know, years later, like 15 years later after the last incident, at a restaurant. I was with my husband, and he was getting takeout at the same time we were getting takeout, which is kind of strange when you think about how, you know, how that could be, because we weren't even from the same town. We were just visiting. And I saw him for the first time in 15 years and, you know, was waiting for the quaking to begin, and it didn't begin. It didn't begin. I was standing there saying, Steve, to my husband, Steve, that's my uncle. And my husband thinking, you know, knowing me, thinking that I would be all upset, oh, let's get out of here, we're not. And I said, no, Steve, wait, that's my uncle. And my uncle looked up at me like this, and then he shuffled out like this little, you know, scared little crab. And I started laughing. And I'll tell you, anybody who's been afraid of somebody for years and years who can act like that, that was such a gift to me. That was such an incredible gift. And I know it's from God. Who orchestrates stuff like that? You know, could I have orchestrated it? No, that wouldn't have happened. I would have never chosen to be in the same restaurant with him. I would have stayed far away if at all possible. And, you know, that's the kind of thing God does. my father, who was, you know, objectively apologetic about, you know, all this incest stuff, how come I didn't see it, and, you know, and I feel so bad, and he felt so guilty that he didn't stop it, blah, blah, blah. Well, that's something that I prayed for years. Please, let him forgive himself, and let him forgive my uncle, who, you know, is not a relative, he's just a brother-in-law. Well, my father ended up having a stroke about 4 years ago, and he ended up in a nursing home. He couldn't be taken care of at home. And he was, you know, pretty severely debilitated, and I was thinking, God, how can you make this happen? Why did you make this? My father was so active, and why did you make this happen? One day, my brother, John, went to visit my father, and because of my father's debilitated state, you know, he could half see out of one eye, he was paralyzed on one side, he didn't know it was my brother. He thought it was my uncle come to see him in the nursing home. And my brother played along. For God knows what reason, he played along. And my brother told him that there was nothing that my father could have done to stop this from going on, and that he was really sick. And I'm hearing about this from my father, you know, and my mother's going, it didn't really happen. But, you know, I'm hearing this, and I'm thinking, God, you walked in that room, and you gave my brother the inspiration to say, yes, I am Uncle Ken. And my father ended up forgiving him. My father was crying, saying, that poor son of a bitch, he's so sick, and he's just so, you know, I feel so bad for him. And, you know, he died about 8 months later. And, you know, if this had happened a little bit before or a little bit afterwards, my father would have had more wits about him to be able to tell it wasn't my uncle. And if it had happened further along, he would have been like in a coma, and he wouldn't have known it was anybody. So, you know, the timing of God and the orchestration that God has is unbelievable. We're in family counseling right now, and, a recent crisis happened. And, you know, the thing, we all had to fill out this sheet, you know, when we first all met. Me, my husband, and my son had to meet with this family counselor. And, you know, one of the things we all had to fill out was, you know, what things are wrong with you, you know? And so I'm checking out eating disorder, depression, you know, blah, 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 and perfectionism. And the thing that I needed the most help with, you know, because that was like, what would you like the most help with? And it was perfectionism. You know, my perfectionism, and God has taken me so far with that. You know, as far as weighing and measuring my food perfectly, I do it to the best of my ability. You know, if it says 4.1 and it's supposed to be, say, 4, I take away. If it says 3.9 and it's supposed to be 4, I put on. And sometimes I take on and put off and take on and put off. And anybody who's got a digital scale knows the joy of that. But it's all about what's my motive. Today I take a look at what's my motive. I'm not a bad person, and I'm not trying to cheat. What's my motive? Usually if I'm hungry at 10 o'clock in the morning after I've eaten at 8 a.m., it's usually because there's something going on. There's something going on. Not because I didn't have enough food. And that's the beauty of weighing and measuring my food and eating the same stuff every single day. It's not like, ooh, did I eat enough? Ooh, did I eat too much? It was the same today as yesterday as the day before. 8 ounces is 8 ounces. 12 ounces is 12 ounces. 4 ounces is 4 ounces. You know, it's the same. And what a relief! What a relief to know that, you know, that I can have emotions today. I get to have emotions today. I get to feel them. I get to feel my emotions. And best of all, I get to be of service. I am in a unique position to be able to help another addict who's just like me. You know, I used to think my sponsor had some unique insight into me because, oh, she has, you know, she has so many, she tells me so many things that I'm thinking. And, you know, it finally dawned on me that my sponsor is an addict just like me. And she, you know, it's no magical insight. It's, she knows me like she knows her. And it's the same thing with me. Sometimes I'll have sponsors say, oh, you're right about everything, you know, and I want to gag. And, you know, no, I'm not right about everything. I'm just telling you what I have experienced, you know, in my little short experience and program. And that's all I have to offer. That's all I have to offer, my own experience. And I'm grateful for the life God has given me today. You know, I'm friends with my husband today too. I really love my husband, and you know, he was not my beloved for the first 10 years of our marriage. He was my be-hated, and I wanted to be-hate him. So it was just not. Things are so different today. You know, usually I start out qualifying what I used to be like, what happened, and what I'm like now. I have a sense of humor today. You know, it's not that deadly soundtrack to Jaws that's always in the background. That was what always, and the angry look on my face, and you know, the solemn, you know, everything is deadly serious. And you know, it doesn't have to be that way. I used to think it did. I used to think in order to be abstinent, I have to be on my guard. I have to be on my guard. And you know what? God does the guarding today. All I do is show up at the scale, show up on my knees, show up and read my literature, show up at my meetings and on the phone. And, you know, God does the hard stuff. I used to think I have to do the hard stuff. This stuff is the easy stuff. Showing up at a meeting, opening my ears, being willing to listen or being willing to share, that's the easy stuff. That's the easy stuff. God does the hard stuff, like taking away the compulsion to overeat or the compulsion to undereat or the compulsion to not take care of myself. You know, that was right along there up there with all the disease stuff, not taking care of myself. And I'm really grateful that I have this fellowship. I'm looking out here and there's, you know, most of the people here I know, you know. I never kept up friendships or relationships, never. You know, if I didn't see you for a couple of months, bye, you're out of my life. And, you know, and that was fine with me. That was fine with me. You know, that's not the way it is today. And I'm really grateful for that. So that's it. Thanks.
Thank you.